Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
For decades, the Salisbury City Council has been divided up into two electoral districts. One is a minority-majority district, and the other is an at-large district that selects the other four members on the council. But that could change under redistricting proposals presented by Mayor Jim Ireton. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. The mayor has laid out three options, and the Salisbury City Council has just begun to begin looking into redistricting itself. But it also gives us a chance to sort of look at some of the issues facing the city through perhaps a slightly different prism. Talk about these issues and others. Our in-studio guests are, of course, Mayor Jim Ireton and Council President Terry Cohen. Appreciate both of you stopping by.
Thank you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, I want to turn to, I guess, the plan itself. There are actually three options, Mayor, that you've laid out. One divides the district, the city into five districts with two minority-majority districts. Staggered elections stay in place. The second one divides it into five districts with two also at-large members, allows all voters to go to the polls every time there's an election. That's similar to the Wicomico County Council. And then there's the third one, which divides the city into two districts, which is similar to what we have now, but expands the first district, which is a minority-majority district. And one of the things I want to turn to you, Jim, is that what really intrigued me about this idea is the idea of dividing these things up into districts. I know you said that you favored actually the second proposal. Tell me a little bit about the rationale, what your thinking is in terms of the idea of perhaps going to individual districts as opposed to the at-large that we have now.
Really, Don, it's, for me, it was a bunch of ideas. One, that the city is now 44% minority, 34% African-American, 7% Latino, and 3% Asian. The other idea was that I wanted to be able to switch things around so that all city voters go to the polls in every election. And the other thing that I wanted to do was make sure that the disparity that exists now, whereas for every two votes that the minority district has, the majority district has five. We vote for four council people and a mayor, and in the minority district, they vote for one council person and the mayor. And then the last real part of it was that I wanted to make sure that every person who has been elected to office, that those that we honor those elections and make sure that everybody has a seat to run for in the future. I think with the 44%, with the population going up now to about almost 31,000 people, the second largest rate of increase in Maryland, just behind College Park in terms of population, I think that the second plan, the one that I endorsed, I think that takes us over the next 10 years. I put the other two plans out there to show that you could divide the city into five districts. And I think that localizes elections. And then I liked that idea, but it didn't honor everybody who was in office, so you add the two at-large seats. The third option was just expanding out the first district as it is today to encompass the approximate 6,121 people that have to be in an election district now, plus or minus 5%.
Do you think that the current at-large district and the minority district that we have at the present, do you think that adequately allows representation for the minorities in the city?
I think it did in 1988 when Billie Jean Jackson and many of the people here in the city took the city to court, and then an agreement was made in the consent decree. I think it worked at that time. But I think when you look back and see that the city was 19% African-American in 1988, now 34% African-American in 2011, and 44% minority overall, I think that you see that things do have to evolve, that moral evolution over time. And I do believe that we have to be prepared for eventually down the road a minority-majority city. So the other thing, you know, a lot of these things went into the computer use and the things of that nature of what you do, what happens eventually. Does eventually the minority district split the city in half because that's where you have to go? And all of these are scientific things. The amount of technology that is available today. We saw the other night from Mr. McKenzie where you can pop up the streets that are on the map that are minority streets. And that helps you do those sorts of things. It's not like he was talking the other night about slide rules and calculators and things of that nature. So the technology allowed us to go through and really look at the areas that are underrepresented in terms of voter turnout, in terms of representation. And I think if you look at that corridor where the second minority majority district comes from, which is really splits through the Church Street neighborhood, comes across through the park and then over into the Princeton Homes area, if you're a person like Terry and I who know the city back and forth, up and down, and we travel those areas, you can pretty much tell that they are now majority minority streets.
Terry, I know that you, as a city council, you're just now beginning to take a look at the numbers. You got a presentation, I think, the other day. But I was curious about what your thoughts are about this idea of individual districts as opposed to the traditional at-large that we've had in the past.
We had actually talked about that a little bit on the previous council. Mm-hmm. So it's not a foreign idea. Other places do it. The question is whether or not these maps or some other map fit the bill. There are a lot of considerations because this is not only redistricting, this is also reapportionment. And there are a lot of rules that you have to play by. We have the consent decree from the court, and then there are other considerations that typically go into this in addition to the stats from the data. So it's a very complicated process.
What about just simply the concept of going from, say, representation at large to individual districts? Because, I mean, one of the suggestions I made that if you have individual districts, you have individual council members who have obviously, one, a smaller number of people they actually have to concentrate on, two, that perhaps issues in a particular district, any part of the city, might get maybe more sense of urgency or attention because that council member is from that particular part of the city as opposed to, say, another part of the city.
Well, that's an interesting question, and you'll find the opinions on that pretty divergent. I mean, what people have, given me feedback over time, it's varied from folks who really like the idea of the small districts and the neighborhood style representation, all the way to the other side. There was one lady that I was speaking with, and I think it was the northeast quadrant of the city, was talking about, she wanted the ability to vote for all of the members of council, because she felt that, the considerations were, that you wanted to take care of the entire city. And a lot of issues about neighborhood, for example, the Daily Times made quite a deal about the neighborhoods from a really negative approach, talking about, one neighborhood packing the council. Well, I think we probably know what they're talking about there, because that was an election issue made by some people, my political opponents, in two elections, 2007 and then again this year. So when I was elected, I didn't run for a neighborhood seat. I ran for District 2, and my outreach goes all across the city, and I hear from constituents all across the city, including from District 1. So any plan that you come up with, is going to have pros and cons. The key for us is that, again, getting back to the fact that it is a complicated process, is ensuring that in meeting one criterion, that you don't wind up violating another.
Well, I was curious, Jim, what about this idea? Do you think that at this point, I mean, that there is this idea that if you have a group of people on the council, doesn't make a difference what council it is, come from a particular neighborhood, do you think that affects how the sense of urgency they see about?
Absolutely not. I know everybody mm-hmm. who's in elected office today, and that couldn't be any further from the truth. Mm-hmm. I think what we have, the opportunity that we have with a bold plan like this, is to take a specific area that maybe has not had the turnout that we wanted, that suffers maybe from turnover rates in their neighborhoods, and really begin to be able to give ownership of a particular part of the city to the people who live there. And that's what I think is the most exciting part about that, is that there would be, as far as I can tell, you go back, if you go over to the east side, Mrs. Mitchell is probably maybe one of the first people. You could go back to Mayor Martin, who was, of course, off Church Street. Who was it that lived all the way out on Viewfield? It was the first African-American woman elected, Rachel outside of the minority district. I think that there are some really great opportunities for people to be able in elected office to really focus on what it is they need in their particular area. And the way these are drawn, If it wasn't for the annexation donut holes that the state of Maryland make us have to do this, you know, I step back and look at my map and I squint my eyes and I say, I know that doesn't look like the state of Maryland, so it must not be gerrymandered. You know, you look at it and you think you've got an east side, you've got a south side, you've got a north side, you've got really one that really sticks right in the middle of the city, and then you've got one that goes out to the west side. And then when you throw the two at-large people in there, I think that's another opportunity, as Mrs. Cohen, President Cohen said, for people to have a larger view and be able to really take the whole city into account. But in no way, shape, or form does anybody who sits on any of these councils over at least since 1988, from the memory that I have, has anybody ever really solely had a strictly geographical focus.
Because, as a matter of fact, I was talking to a number of people in the Church Street area, and I remember one person who remarked that they were discouraged that the Church Street neighborhood had not progressed as far as it had, as it, they thought it should have. Obviously, there's been some contentious issues with bricks and so on and so forth. But the one thing that came clear is, you know, what this particular part of the city needs is not only a vision, but perhaps just simply political clout. That is, that there was this dissatisfaction, the sense that it was not being addressed as perhaps it should be now, as opposed to maybe in the past.
Well, I would say that if that's the case, there could be a different opinion right around the corner. But I would say this: if we look forward and look and see what we're trying to achieve, if we look at all of the houses that are being done by Habitat for Humanity in that area and the way we're working to reduce those crime rates and those part ones and part twos, both down 30% this year so far, if you can find someone who is there who can mobilize their neighbors, not just political clout, just neighborhood organizing, the things that Terry and I have been doing for decades, that is something that helps as well. There, you know, you can look and see on websites about apportionment or redistricting about all the times that places have ended up in court because there has been a disparate impact, and I'm no lawyer, so I'm just going to throw that out there as the one thing I could get out of that disparate impact of people who were underrepresented. And I would say, and I think Mrs. Cohen would agree with me, that when we look at election returns, it turns out that there are places that are dismally low. And Terry and I will both tell you that we've walked every one of those doors in those places as well, because we feel that it's important to be everywhere. So I really think that a bold plan that really sets the ownership in a particular area or neighborhood, and, you know, none of these are just one particular neighborhood, a lot of these, because you have to have 6,121 in each district, they do spread out a little bit, but it is not citywide. That's why the two at-large seats, I think, are most important.
Do you think, I mean, we've had issues about whether it's the BRICS, Lenders of the Week. We've had some debates about that. Some people said, gee, we're not moving, for instance, ahead in some cases in downtown. I mean, obviously, there's disagreements. There seems to be this growing frustration that I sense that the city is not acting, and that, you know, one suggestion was, well, maybe what we need are people who directly represent individual pieces of the puzzle, as it were. I mean, is the city moving? I mean, there's a sense of frustration that things are simply not being moving ahead like people would like.
Well, I think similarly, there's also people who are pleased about those decisions because they don't feel that they were right in the first place. We had an election back in April, and since I've been seated, under the new term, there has, I think, been not the level of collaboration that I had hoped for. I think that when we look at the problems that the city is facing, it's not so much that they are necessarily neighborhood specific, because, for example, the BRICS wasn't about Church Street, it was about fiscal issues and liability issues. One of the things that this council, along with the mayor, I think, has really been trying to focus on, when you talk about low voter turnout, for example, has been the institutional neglect, if you will, of very fundamental neighborhood support systems throughout this city. And this council has been trying very hard, since it was seated in April, to be focused on those types of issues, because without them, we can talk about trying to stimulate, you know, political clout. But if you don't even have the foundation for quality of life that creates the institutional capacity that then generates people, motivates people to turn out to vote, then it doesn't happen. So I think it's not a matter of, you know, which neighborhood do people come from. It's a matter of where are our priorities. And, you know, we have some different perspectives on what works and what doesn't work. A number of the things that this council has looked at is whether or not the same approach that's been used before for the past number of years has been working. And in the case of, you know, one item, you know, we tried to try something different with Urban Salisbury, and they didn't want to go that route, so they closed. I've had probably more. I know that the mayor will probably disagree, but I've had actually a lot of positive feedback from that, saying that if something has gone on for a decade and we have not seen the kind of improvement that we expected, then we need to try something else.
Mayor, what about that?
I don't know whether or not. I don't really look at it in that particular perspective. I look at a map, and I see that we're all the way down Pemberton Drive, almost in Nisdale. We're all the way down almost to Fruitland at Villages at Tony Tank. We're all the way out Route 50 at Sassafras. We almost touch the Del Mar line in our industrial park and Villages at Avalon. We're all the way out Route 50 now, all the way out to Warwick. And I think that lends itself to having those districts have their own representation. Terry and I are going to field calls from whoever, and we're going to try and help whoever. I mean, that's there's no doubt about that. What might be more helpful is the relationship that someone who is specifically elected from those geographic areas, to be able to build that relationship, not just with the other council members, but with the people in public works, with the people who pick up the garbage and the recycling, with the people who sweep the streets, with the people who make sure that the street lights are on. We're going to take care of it, and Terry and I are going to do it as fast as we possibly can, because we believe that government should be responsive. But it also, I think, would be helpful if there was someone in each one of those specific areas that was a conduit for their neighbors to be able to build the relationships. Not because things are wrong, but because we can. Once you do that, you can start to be proactive, and that's really, and does that mean things? Because there's a difference between getting the street swept and the street lights on, and an argument over policy or a debate over policy in the council chambers. And as I travel around, what I find more often than not is that people really aren't too interested in the blatherings of politicians. What they're interested in is the great clean, so when the rain comes, there isn't ponding and flooding. When the street light's on in an area that might not be particularly safe, and we're trying to make residents feel a sense of ownership, that they know, you know, it's the person that they can call. You know, all of us have are the people who work for us in City Hall who help us do those things. I just really believe that we have such a golden opportunity to really reflect what Salisbury looks like in 2011 and what Salisbury is going to look like all the way to 2021.
Well, I mean, Terry mentioned this idea about a lack of collaboration. What did you mean by that?
Well, when we talk about, you know, for example, looking at the redistricting again. Council is now several months along. The mayor has had the data to look at, and we've been asking, you know, this could have been approached a little bit differently, as other municipalities have done, because one of the things that's going to be a driving force now with this redistricting and reapportionment is the question of, do we wind up back in court because of the consent decree, which could take several months, or is that going to box us into a position? Because the courts are going to want to see what plan we come up with. And in the meantime, we have to set up what the plan's going to be. And the later that you let the public know, the more you diminish the opportunity for people filing, for the public to know. We have seen what happens when we so much as change a polling place. People get confused, they don't show up, they get frustrated, they go home. So we want to approach this very, very carefully. You know, the mayor was talking about the people knowing who to call to get their streets swept and the lights turned on. I haven't found that to be a problem, quite honestly. People will call me. Either they haven't called the mayor's office and I will direct them to do so, or I'll go ahead and pass on the message for them. Or they have called the mayor's office or whatever department it is, and they say, well, I'm frustrated because this hasn't happened, and it's not always the department's fault. Sometimes it is, sometimes not. You know, So my job is to help trying to smooth a nice bridge there. And I get that from all over the city, including not from my district. So I don't know that, and I'm not opposed to the concept of doing the districting plan. As I said before, council had discussed it before, and I was very open to the idea. What I'm looking at in terms of how we're going to lay out this map is not only the goals of what we want to accomplish, but the restrictions within which we have to accomplish them. The mayor has worked with our planning and zoning expert in GIS, Frank McKenzie, to, for example, make sure that the districts are within that 5% above or below the ideal population deviation. And yet, when you read, there has been so much case law that has come off on election redistricting and reapportionment that just staying within the deviation, if it conflicts with another governmental purpose, does not guarantee that it's going to pass muster in court. So we're going to be, and I'm hoping that this will be a very collaborative process, not only with the mayor's office, but also with the public, and hopefully with some experts in the field, to help us navigate, if you will, that sort of legal minefield that's associated with doing this type of a project.
So how collaborative do you think the city council and the mayor is at this point?
Well, as I said, at this point, the mayor had the data and right. has been working on plans, and now we have Mayor Ireton's three proposals. So,
You sound like you're expressing some frustration at that.
Well, I think, you know, the council has been asking for several months to know when the data would be ready, when we could review it, when we would all sit down and talk about it. The city clerk, bless her heart, asked all the time, and, it just wasn't coming. So we are where we are now, but now that the timeline is different than where we would have been back in June. That's all.
Oh, by the way, I wanted needed to raise something. Another issue. Obviously, we have a change in the charter amendment in terms of where the city attorney, whether it comes under the city council, as opposed to the mayor. There's a petition drive already to get it on the ballot. What are your feelings about? I mean, obviously, you supported it. Let me start with Jim first. What did you think about that?
I really only have really two things to say about it. I think it's been clear from the position of the city attorney that 80% of the work that the city attorney does is for the executive side. So that's one of the reasons that I would oppose the change. The other reason that I would oppose the change is that all I see from what I read throughout the country is that there is a conflict of interest when the head lawyer works for the head legislator. That doesn't involve checks and balances. And when the head legislators are in charge of hiring and firing solely the city attorney, I think that invites a conflict of interest. And then the last part that I would say is that I'm not exactly sure what direction we're headed in when the highest paid department in the city, the mayor, has absolutely no say whatsoever in the hiring and firing. As it is right now, I would nominate the person who would be the city attorney, and I would go and get advice and consent from the council, which is what we do for all our department heads. I think when you take that away and you take the check and balance away in that situation, I think it says a consolidation of power into one branch of government. And as many of us have said on the particular issue, in the next election, whoever runs for mayor, I'm not exactly sure how they're supposed to answer questions when all of the power has been consolidated into one person, and that's not the mayor.
Terry?
Well, interestingly enough, that 80-20 split, in a way, makes the argument for the conflict of interest in the other direction, that the person who controls most work, that it becomes a matter of conflict of interest, in that if they right now, the way it's set up, the mayor is able to fire the city attorney unilaterally. So one of the checks and balances in the hiring and firing with the council is the fact that more than one person, a majority at least, has to agree on both the hiring end and the firing end. From the administrative end, now there could be a shift in percentages. It could be wind up being 35%, 65%. Because conceivably, if more work is done up front on the legislation, we may have less of a need on the administrative side, for example, with litigation or some of the appeals that we're having. One of the things we're working on right now is trying to fix some of our housing code. Secondly, we have had situations in the past, and there have been a number of accusations that this was about who is in the chair and that it was about Mayor Ireton, but the problems that we're talking about precede, have been there for a number of years, that when we don't have the person who helps write the law fully accessible and there's not a diversity in the portfolio of who can assist with the legal advice, that the council winds up becoming more of a passive receptacle for the administration. And it is the council, as the legislative body, that's supposed to make policy, not simply yay or nay it, shall we say, as it comes down the pike. Petition drive is on. We'll have to wait to see what happens Saturday, since that's the deadline, and then we'll simply go from there.
Because one of the things that struck me about all of this is that it has raised a conflict that apparently seems to be going on as we've moved through the years. And I ran across this, and only by accident, on a blog, and it was directed at the mayor. It says, quote, "While I have been sane for more than a year now, Jim Ireton is with Barry Tillman. Every single person I have ever gone after since I started this blog 7 years ago is gone, fired, terminated, voted out. There's no help on the way unless you meant Sapoa. Enjoy the rest of your term," being Jim, "because you will be voted out. The tribe has spoken." One of the questions that came to my mind is, who is the tribe? I realize this is a rhetorical flourish, but there seems to be a group out there seems to be saying, in effect, Jim's not doing what we want him to do. What's going on?
There's several words that come to my mind when I hear what you've read, but I can only assume that was posted by anonymous, and posted by anonymous means absolutely nothing to me.
It was posted on the SBY News.
Posted by anonymous means absolutely nothing to me.
Okay. What about you? What does that mean?
Let's face it, Don. In
Salisbury, what's going on here?
There are definitely factions in Salisbury, because if you look at the Daily Times, I mean, the first letter out there on the charter amendment was from former councilwoman Lynn Cathcart, in which she made some very personal comments attacking myself and the council vice president. So things have always been a bit testy at times in Salisbury, and where you might find a group on a blog, you will find a group in the Daily Times. The Daily Times was able, for example, on the redistricting plans, to make a decision only 2 days after it was released by the mayor. It's a really complicated process with a lot of legal ramifications, in addition to all of the quality of life and representation issues that we want to resolve. And yet, unless the newspaper had information long before council did, they were able, after condemning the council for moving quickly on the charter amendment, which was a pretty simple change, actually, that was fully vetted by the city attorney, the Daily Times was able to make an attack piece regarding that. So I think, rather than us getting caught up in what the media is saying, the informal or formal media is saying about either one of us, we need to stay really focused on what the issue is and try to come to the best resolution possible for the city.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would say that if we hold things up and get ourselves in a position where we are not making decisions or spending our time worried about what everybody is saying about us, and taking time at public meetings to smack other elected officials down, then we're not using our time wisely. The online media and the media itself, which has now become mostly online as well, they're going to say what they want, and I don't believe that it is a good use of our time, a good use of our intellectual resources, to spend time worrying about what they're saying. So I'm personally not doing that. I'm going to move forward with the pace that I set the minute I came into office, and one day you're up, one day you're down. That can't be what is the guiding force that leads us. What is the binding the force that really sends us forward is our citizens and their want for change, both in the areas of crime, in the areas of the river, in the areas of our neighborhoods. And if my tribe is the crime rates, and my tribe is the neighborhoods, and my tribe is the river, then certainly my fire is not extinguished.
We've been talking with Mayor Jim Ireton and Council President Terry Cohen, and we've been discussing, amongst other things, not only the charter amendment we talked about a moment ago, but of course the possibility of individual districts and redistricting. I appreciate both of you coming in and taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks a lot for your time, Don.
Have a good day, Don.
And this has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.